This is a free Off The Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off The Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off The Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
Very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome back to a new season of the Koi Gig Podcast. We are absolutely delighted to be back after a little bit of a rest over the summer. This season we are going to be bringing you all the top stories happening both here in the league in Ireland and also across the water in the WSL. To do all that, I am delighted to say that I have Karen Duggan and Scarlett Heron by my side once again, as long as they will have me for the season. Anyways, guys, how was your summer?
Good. It flew by. I feel like there was loads of things going on that kind of kept our interest peaked. So it wasn't a full break. Then I'm sure we'll chat loads about that later. But yeah, great summer, great weather. Hoping that it lasts a little bit longer.
And Scarlett, what about you? You've already been busy, as I have seen.
Yeah, well, back playing where our pre-season is over. So we've had our second game there yesterday. So yeah, a busy summer of running. Lots of running, but at least we had nice weather for it. So that's one thing I can say.
I also saw you managed to venture over to the States for a couple of the World Cup games. How was that?
Yeah, it's funny. I booked it like, hopefully, about 6 months ago when Ireland were in that playoff and had my fingers crossed, but it wasn't to be. But anyway, yeah, I went over for 2 weeks during our off season and got to a couple of games. So it was really, really cool. Good atmosphere and all, so it was class.
Well, hopefully we will be doing the same in a couple of weeks when it comes to Brazil next summer. And we will have loads of build up to that, as well as potential playoffs, anything else that comes later on in the season, as well as chatting to a couple of the characters who are going to be involved in those crucial games against Kazakhstan coming up in the next couple of weeks, which I'm very excited about. But for the moment, we're going to look at some of the transfers that have happened over the last couple of months and weeks, because if you look at our current starting 11, or what we would assume to be our current starting 11 as a national squad, basically the entire squad has moved. It's maybe not exactly what you'd want in the lead up to very, very important games to potentially qualify for a World Cup. But again, it could be great for the squad. It could bring some freshness to things. Karen, what are your, before we actually go into like the ins and outs of who's gone where and what has happened, how are you feeling about the fact that so many players have moved?
I actually think it is a testament to how focused they are on the national team, because I think they're making these moves to ensure that they're putting themselves either in a position to get selected and go professional, or to go and get game time. Because I know they kind of, there's all this chat around, oh, game time doesn't matter, and people coming in to the team, they always perform in the Irish shirt, but that should be an anomaly as opposed to the norm. We do want people who are getting regular game time, who are playing at a certain standard week in, week out. Like, that was the whole push to go professional in the first place, to have people playing at a higher standard consistently. So if that's the rhetoric we're going with, we really need to hone in on that and push that home. So you're going to see, as we go through them, most of the transfers are into WSL too, and also a lot looking towards kind of the promoted teams that came through there. So they're brand new teams that we probably don't, well, not brand new teams, but they're teams we don't know an awful lot about. But I think that those moves are motivated by their international ambitions, which I think, I guess, is a good thing.
Scarlett, you're one of the players that has made the big leap across the pond over recent times to, you know, commit to that fully professional, to commit to playing football day in, day out. What do you think about some of these moves? Like, are you in a similar spot to Karen and thinking that this is important in terms of the national team for people's development and also getting that regular sort of playing time.
Yeah, I think Karen's dead right, which she says that a lot of players are moving to get more minutes and then other players are moving to take the next step in terms of being immersing themselves in a fully professional environment. You have the likes of Maria Reynolds and Eivin Clancy, who have both moved from the League of Ireland. And I think both of them are, that their moves are well deserved. I think that both players have wanted to move abroad for quite some time. I know Eivin was just finishing her degree, which is obviously another thing that is discussed a lot about, you know, female players needing another outlet outside of football. So I think it's great for her. And also for Maria, as you said, so it's two players that have been, you know, knocking on the door of the national team and have been in the most recent squad. So I think for them, it's brilliant. And then when you look across at all the other names, it's players who are now going to be pushing to be starting or getting more minutes than maybe they were in previous seasons. I know that obviously it was a discussion point last year of players being selected but hadn't got a vast variety of minutes in the months leading up to, I suppose, the camps that they were selected for. So I think in fairness to all these girls, as Karen said, they've all pushed now to be knocking on the door to get into the squad and to be in the best physical and position to be able to perform then when they come onto the international stage. Yeah. So I think it's fair play to all of them for making the jumps.
Yeah, and you're saying like best physical position, but also best mental position. Like Scarlett, you'd know better, but this is your day in, day out. And when you're training all the time, and yes, it might be at a certain level, but if you're training all the time and you're not getting minutes at the weekend, it's very difficult mentally to keep going and keep going. And it's a long season for a lot of people. So moving to a place where you are going to get game time, some people will see it as, you know, a drop in standard maybe from one club to another. But if you're happy and you're playing, like that can do wonders for someone as well.
Yeah, 100%. And that's something that we want for all the players going into those important games against Kazakhstan in a couple of months. I'm gonna say quickly. I don't know how quickly I can do this because there are so many of them. I'm going to quickly run through the moves that we have had and we can dissect some of the bigger ones and what we think it'll actually mean for us in a national context over the next couple of weeks. So, Katie McCabe, Arsenal to Chelsea. Still not sure about that one. Denise O'Sullivan, which was a big one, came to Liverpool. We thought we were going to get to see her in the WSL a little bit more, but returns back to the States. She is with Gotham. Emily Murphy has moved from Newcastle to Brighton, which is something that we probably weren't all that surprised about because it was reported a lot last season that she wanted to move down south. Leanne has left Liverpool after a good stint there. She has gone to Newcastle, which I think could be exciting for her. And Newcastle are doing a lot of really good stuff. Scarlett, I know you've been to a couple of their matches over the season. Kyra Carusa has gone from Kansas City Current to HB College permanently. She was there on loan for different times, but now she has permanent move there. Saoirse Noonan has gone from Celtic to Watford. She also scored over the weekend. Eivin Clancy has joined Watford as well from Shelburne. Lucy Quinn has gone from Birmingham to Sheffield United. Jamie Finn has moved from Sunderland to Burnley. Grace Maloney has also gone from Sunderland to Southampton. Jessie Stapleton has moved on from West Ham after a couple of years there, but also a couple of years very much hampered by injury, unfortunately, for her to Leicester City. Jessu has gone from West Ham to Leicester City. Tyler Toland, Durham to Burnley. Kelly Brady has gone from Crystal Palace to Glasgow. She also scored over the weekend. Maria Reynolds, as you mentioned earlier. Scarlett, she has gone from Rovers to Sheffield United. Ellen Malloy has gone from Rovers over to Pittsburgh. So another player over in the States. And Rusha, question mark there, as she keeps pointing out on social media. We don't know what is exactly going on with her situation at the moment. Now, if you were to look at all those changes, the thing that would probably strike you the most is that they're all gone to WSL2 or the Championship, as I like to call it, because I hate the term WSL2. And this is something that we've been talking about for a while, that we thought we were going to see more players drop out of the WSL and go to the lower league in a way that we've seen happen in Irish football. Same with the men, in terms of whenever the league gets to a higher standard, there's probably less opportunity for players in the higher league. But also an interesting one is that we're probably seeing less players, or less of the younger cohort of players, also going over to the States, which used to be a very profitable run. Scarlett, if you were to kind of look at the trend of all the players that have moved, what's the main thing that kind of sticks out for you?
Well, I think like the main thing is we've touched on it before. I think they're all going to get minutes. I think we've obviously seen a lot of players go to the same club. Like we've seen a lot of Irish girls go to Burnley, who are obviously newly promoted. Same with Watford, same with Sheffield United. Like we have a lot of players that were, you know, connecting at different places, which I think is nice as well, to have that Irish connection at clubs, and especially for the younger players who are coming into the environment for the first time, to have an Irish head there. I know, like for myself, when I came to Hibs first, like Cara Grant was great for myself, like just nearly having someone that you kind of half know, and obviously they always kind of look out for you. So I think that's really important. And as well as that, I think it just shows the quality that there is in England. You spoke about there how we're seeing more and more come into the Championship. I think that's just because the flurry of international players that have gone to the WSL in the last few years, whereas maybe 5-10 years ago it was all UK-based players playing in the WSL. But now a lot of those top-class players have been pushed down to the Championship, which I think just shows the quality that is in the WSL now. And like, maybe there's a bit of a gap opening there, I don't know. But I think it's just testament to, as I said, the quality that is there. And then as well, the quality that is in the Championship as well. I think that's grown an awful lot. And yeah, I think it's just the most important thing for these girls is to just play as much as possible. Like, you talk about Jessie Stapleton there, obviously didn't really feature for West Ham, but has been on maybe two really good loan spells in the Championship now. So like the likes of her going into a newly relegated Leicester, you'd hope that would be a starting centre half for them. And then Jessie as well, like I think it's really going to be an exciting period for her. If she can stay fit, like we've seen in the most recent qualifiers, what she can do. Imagine her with, you know, 60 to 90 minutes every week, you know, playing in the WSL too, and, you know, getting as many minutes under her belt as possible. I think that goes for most of these girls as well. Like Lucy Quinn probably struggled for minutes last year a wee bit. For her to get into a Sheffield United side where I think she'll be one of the main leaders and focal points, I think is really important too.
Karen, for you, what's the biggest move out of all the Irish players? What's the one do you think is the most essential for a player or for the national side? You can go either way.
Essential because of the role I see her playing in the Irish team is Jess Zhu, and just being able to kind of consistently get minutes with Leicester with maybe not the same spotlight on it as the WSL one and the same expectations of her. Hopefully she'll be managed well. And Leicester, for me, that's a real coup for Leicester as well, because I think Jess Zhu is going to be, if not already, at a WSL standard. So that's a brilliant move for both of them. So that's the one I'm most excited to see how she gets on, because we saw glimpses of it in the last internationals, just how good she is. And I think she's going to be key for us. I think the most interesting one and the one that we'd like to dissect and pick our brains on is obviously Denise's move. And I think it goes back to what I was saying about not only being physically at a certain level, but also mentally being happy. We are obviously going to discuss it and be concerned with the fact that she's not featuring in the squad for Gotham due to injury. That's probably a different conversation, but just in terms of the move, and for so long I suppose we were like, and us and other media outlets were asking Denise, when are you moving to WSL? But it doesn't have to, it's not for everyone. The WSL obviously is the powerhouse of the leagues now. And we can see that by the fact that the majority of our players are going down to WSL too. Like, we can't compete with, you know, the likes of Puteas and stuff coming in. We don't have players at that standard, but we've got very, very good players who are going to do really, really well in the Championship. So Denise's one is the most interesting, just in terms of understanding players' psychology, players' mentality, and getting maybe an insight into what it's like to be at a WSL team who aren't at the top of the league, you know, where we have these massive expectations because Liverpool as a brand and a club are household names. But what is the reality? Like, the gulf between Katie being at Chelsea and Denise at Liverpool, did she feel like was she at a better standard in the WSL? Was there better facilities? Was it just the style of play? There's loads to unpick with that one that I think is really interesting.
Yeah, because I think whenever Denise initially signed for Liverpool, we were all obviously happy to be able to watch her in the WSL. But it was surprising to most people that that was the club that she went to. I think a lot more people expected to go to, even if it wasn't one of the City, Arsenal, Chelsea top three, to maybe like a United or something, who were kind of touching on the edge of, you know, competing for European places. But as you say, like, maybe being in the States, it just suits her style of play better. Maybe it suits the sort of standards that she expects. She did. I do remember talking to her whenever she first came over and we had her on the podcast, and she did say that she was impressed by the facilities around Liverpool. But I think the fact that she made such an obvious difference when she came in that January to that squad, and that squad was so threadbare at the time, and, you know, we were talking about them potentially getting relegated, maybe that's just also not an environment that you want to be in at
times.
Yeah,
I was just about to say, like, facilities don't equate to environment, you know, and if you look at the amount of signings Liverpool have made compared to the, we would say, notable exits, that is that a pattern of a team that's going to go up the table this year? I'm not sure. Like, they've gotten, well, Kiara Keating is the only notable signing, really.
Yeah, I think so, that I've seen. Like, they've been linked with some interesting signings, but nothing has actually gotten across the line as of yet. Scarlett, for you, what would be, same sort of question, what would be the most either essential for a player or essential for the national team signing out of all those options?
I think Jessu, as Karen said, is extremely important. I also think Emily Murphy making the step from the Championship up to WSL will be massive for her. I think it's obviously well deserved with her performances last season, not just obviously for Newcastle, but on the international stage. I think that is really where a player can put make a name for themselves, and I suppose put themselves in the shop window, because it's such a massive stage. But yeah, I think I'm really excited to see how she develops in the WSL, and obviously with a team like Brighton, who have been that sort of team where we've expected maybe a little bit more from in most recent years, and, you know, a team that is always very well structured, very well prepared, but maybe just lacks that cutting edge that can bring them to the sort of, to push a sort of United team for that.
Maybe I think they'll do it this year. I think you're right. I think,
and do we not say that at the start of every season?
We do. But I thought, like, they had a little bit of a blip in the middle last year, but they finished strong and they had, like, a really strong start. So they brought in, obviously, Emily Murphy now. You'd hope that that will equate to goals. Experience with Leah Valti in those games where they shouldn't have dropped points against their kind of mid-table compatriots, and Gabby George. They're all experienced, and or like Emily Murphy being someone who we have high, high hopes for. I think that bringing in that experience, and is, if they can maybe have another couple of young up and coming players to kind of bolster their squad, I do think that Emily Murphy, I think it'll be a team that she'll fit into quite well. I think there's enough experience around her to make the transition into WSL seamless, because I think she has the right attitude and kind of physical attributes to make an impact there.
Well, if you were to name a player that made the most impact in the national team that we hadn't seen before, so not a Katie or a Denise, you probably would have gone straight to Emily and everything that she learned at Newcastle. And Aoife Mannion spoke really, really well about it last season as well, whenever they were going into camps, just about the maturity that she had seen come onto Emily Murphy. And I remember when she was first announced for the Irish team and she played in that French game against in Metz in the qualifiers, and we'd heard about her, you know, playing in the academy in Chelsea, and there was all these really big high hopes for her, and she'd gone to the States and, like, competed to a high standard there with her university. But I think it just went to show, like, the difference between competing at a university level compared to actually being in full-time regular professional football, because even her just having that, like, year at Newcastle made such a massive difference to the player that we saw on the field, even in terms of you know, her confidence, her ability, I remember watching that game in Metz, and it was almost like she was afraid to say anything to players, you know, like Katie would shout something at her and you could almost see her kind of like jump within herself. Whereas by the time we got around to the last qualifying fixtures, she was so much more confident, and hopefully Brighton will bring that. Like, they have incredible facilities there. They've always been very, very reputable for how they treat their women's team. Obviously, we also have Caitlin Hayes down there. And as you said, Scarlett, having another Irish person in a setup is great. And if that can bring more to the national team, it'll be really, really interesting for her in the next coming weeks and months. And also, if she's looked for a move down south for a while, mentally, as we were talking at the start of the show, that will be really important for her as well, that she's in a place where she's happy and she's looking forward to the season of football.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, you know, it's talked about there as well, moving down south. We know that she has family there and has wanted to move down for a while. I know there was talk about it in January as well. So I think you're right. Like, so much of being a footballer is, you know, being mentally sound and being mentally happy, going to work every day and, you know, showing up for a weekend game and, you know, being content and confident in yourself. And that all comes from your environment. And I suppose that's the most important thing. Like, even you talk about Caitlin Hayes there, and you could see in the announcement video that they did a little sort of collab of her ringing Caitlin Hayes before she signed. So it was a nice wee thing, but I think it is so important that, you know, she's happy there. And that goes for all the players that make that jump. Which is why, as I said, it's nice that a lot of the players who have moved have a sort of Irish compatriot with them. And hopefully, like as Karen already touched on, I think your mental capacity in football is probably more important than your physical capacity. And I think if these players can, you know, be mentally in a good place, I think their performance on the pitch will reflect that, and hopefully on the international stage as well.
Yeah, Scarlett, you talked there about mentally being in a good place. And one player whose name also came up quite a lot there was Jessu, who's obviously had a really difficult time over recent seasons with injuries. But Karen, I don't know if you remember this, but like, we interviewed her back when we first started the podcast. So she was like a teenager, and this was just before she had signed for the WSL. And her football brain, even at that stage, was so interesting. Like, the way she thought about football was so intelligent, so smart. And from the few times that I've talked to her since, it seems that that off time has just kind of allowed her to almost steep her brain in more tactics, in more football, and to immerse herself even more. And hopefully, touch wood, all things going well, that she gets a clean run at the season and she's able to play. But we do have a little bit of audio from her here talking to Leicester Club Media about her ambitions for the season ahead.
Really excited. I think the ambitions of the club and the plan and the structure that they have in place is really exciting. I can't wait to get started. I think I'm a technical player. Hopefully I can get some goals and assists. Hopefully assist more. Tread people in on goal. So yeah, just hoping I can add some goals and assists and help this club get back to where they really belong to. Feel back to the Jess that I was before that. So yeah, I'm just hoping to stay fit and play as many games as I can for Leicester, like I said, help them get back up to the first league and also play national team consistently again.
It's interesting listening to her talk there, and she's talking about her ambitions for the season, and she says hopefully I'll get some goals and assists, but more so assists. And that's a rare thing to hear a player admit.
Yeah, well, she's not an out-and-out striker. So, I mean, she's been brought in to fulfil a role at Leicester, and I do think it's that kind of creative player in the 10. I think she can operate from a deeper lying midfield as well. I think she has the engine to get up and down in a way kind of similar to what Denise does. She has that bit of guile, though that really suits that number 10 role. I think she'll do very well. I think for a small girl in stature as well, she has a lot of physicality that goes under the radar. So she'll be brilliant there. So yeah, hopefully she'll be the Bruno Fernandez of the WSL too.
Well, hopefully there won't be any results like the whole one at the weekend.
No, last year's Bruno.
Last year's Bruno. Scarlett, What do you think like the potential is for a player like Jess if she actually does manage to stay fit? You know, I remember watching her in Norwich against England, and despite the caliber of opponent that she was up against, she very much looked at home. And that was at a time when, you know, she was just getting back to regular minutes after one of her injuries.
Yeah, I think I said it already. Like, I think her coming into the national team in the last window and playing as well as she did and having that impact off the bench, like, imagine her with consistent minutes and, you know, growing in confidence even more and now playing for Leicester. Hopefully, as you can say, she can stay fit. And I think it's that nearly old saying in football, like, the best ability is availability. And I think that will be the most important thing for her this season. So even in that clip, you can hear her say, I just want to get back to the old Jess. And I think that's really poignant. Like, I'd say she probably struggled a lot. Like, you struggle, I'd say, with a massive injury with your identity outside of football. And, like, I think it'll stand to her mentally, I think, to have to go through that many hardships and that many injuries and the lonely days in the gym and, you know, wondering will you ever get back to the same level. I think that'll definitely stand to her. And as we're talking about, like, the mental side of it is so important. So I think it's fair play to her for getting back to the position that she was in before, getting back into the national team, getting this move now. I think it's really, really positive for her. Obviously, there's a good cohort at Leicester, and I think they've put the right investment in to try push to get back into the WSL. Obviously, it's not ideal for them going down, but it'll offer her now an opportunity to play for a top side who are, you know, keen on getting back into the top flight, but also a team that should be able to play in week in, week out and show her best flair and, you know, play with that confidence that we know that she has from seeing her on the national stage, but also just growing back into that role and sort of asserting herself as maybe an out and out 10, whereas we might have seen her moved about a wee bit. So I think her establishing that 10 position at Leicester would be really, really important for me. But just like even in that audio, as I said, like for her to be able to get back to herself, I think it's the most important thing for her.
Yeah, and Karen, like Leicester has been a team that we've praised multiple times over the years in terms of how they have invested. And last year, they didn't manage to scrape through in the way that they have in other years. But they've been smart about the positions that they buy in. And also a lot of their players that have been successful have gone on to other WSL teams and been quite successful there. So it's not a case necessarily that, you know, you see her move from the club that she was at, West Ham, and think, oh, this is a drop.
No, I think Leicester have been a team who have done a lot with very little resources. They've been very clever in the transfer market. I think this is a huge signing for them, huge coup, like I said. They're also a team who have been able to adapt to their environment. Well, you know, they became a counter-attacking team when they needed to. At times, obviously, they tried to play too expansively. They got torn apart. But they're a team now that can go back into the WSL too and play football. It's not that they're going to be banked up like they were in the WSL. So I think a lot of the WSL teams will play more football, and that will really suit Jess's style. So I think it's a really, really good fit for them. And they're a team that you'd like to see come back up based on how they've competed over the last number of years. Obviously, they were unlucky to miss out on staying up in that playoff last year, going down on penalties. Maybe the break will nearly do them well. Like, it's a lot to be at the bottom of the table consistently and just scrapping for points. And I think they've held on to a good chunk of their squad. They've made a few signings to bolster it for the level that they're now at. So I think a lot of that squad then will kind of get a mental reprieve and enjoy football a bit more and hopefully put themselves in good stead to go on a run to get promoted for next year and then hopefully come in there with renewed energy again. Yeah, they're a club I do like, and I'm hopeful for the sake of Jessie Staple and Jess Sue and obviously Katie Keane, who we were full of praise for at the end of the season, that she can continue to get game times and continue on that run. Because again, they're three young girls, they're three people who can have a huge impact on Ireland in the future. But I also think Katie Keane now is probably pushing. She will have taken huge confidence from where she was at the end of last season and why wouldn't she be putting her hands up for one of those spots? She's playing at the same level of Barry Courtney as the other two, so it should be a level playing field for her too. I thought she was exceptional at the end of last season. So they're definitely the team probably that I'll be keeping the closest eye on in terms of the impact they can bring forward into the national team through those three girls.
Yeah, and as you say, Katie was exceptional at the end of last season. I mean, the penalty shootout in terms of who was promoted, relegated, it was the story of the Irish, which was absolutely brilliant. But like, she's probably got more minutes at a higher level, even though it has only been a couple of games towards the end of last season, than the other two have, which is interesting because obviously she came in those big games, did really, really well. So it'll be interesting to see what she is able to do for the rest of the season. I put it off for long enough, but we do have to briefly touch on the fact that Katie McCabe is now a Chelsea player. And more so, this one, what I'm most interested in is that when you do have a player who has spent so long at a club and the club has become so much of their identity, and I know we kind of talked a little bit about it during the season last year because we knew it was happening, but now she's properly in the Chelsea blue. She's done the pre-season tour to Australia. You know, we've seen all the pictures. The league is starting.
It suits her. Come on, it suits her. Admit it.
I can't. I just, it feels so weird. Even when I see an Instagram photo pop up and I go to like it or something, I'm like, oh.
I saw a picture of her and Lauren James the other day and I was like, the slog that they're going to have down that left side. As much as I wouldn't be a Chelsea fan, like, I am looking forward to seeing that. And Thomas kind of in the mix with that as well. Like, that, we don't usually praise Chelsea for their style of play, but there's something definitely to look forward to with them.
Yeah, no, there definitely is. Like, I'm intrigued, I think is probably the right word as to how it's going to go, because we only know the Arsenal Katie McCabe really for the last decade. We don't know this new Chelsea version of her, which I'm excited to see, as long as it doesn't bring them another title.
As an Irish fan, you're excited.
As an Irish fan, I'm excited. And actually, as an Irish fan, I'm also excited because I feel like we've seen over the last year or two, like, definitely from an Irish perspective, a bit more frustration creeping into Katie and her game. And, you know, whether that's, I don't think that's like necessarily directly related to what was going on at Arsenal or whatever, but I do think that hopefully
a new motivation,
yeah, a new environment could be really interesting for her.
Yeah, I think so. We'd love to see Katie playing with a bit more freedom. Obviously, she was a leader in the Arsenal dressing room. I'm sure it'll be the same in the Chelsea dressing room, but maybe there'll be a little bit less pressure as not like a cult hero. And, you know, I think that freedom, if she can translate that over to the Irish team, would only be a good thing for us, because I think she takes on so much in that Irish team. Obviously, being our marquee player, playing at the highest standard of anyone, she's world class, as well as all the media duties and everything that comes with being captain. Sometimes I think that you're right, the frustration is born out of just how much is on her shoulders. So I'm hoping that, like you say, being surrounded by that different environment, different characters, and just having a new perspective on things will kind of just loosen her up and make things a little bit lighter coming into those camps. Because we saw obviously in that Wales qualifier where there was something totally like going in on Katie. She was carrying way too much in those games. We want that to not be the case come December. Obviously, we have to get over Kazakhstan first, but like, you want that new lease of life. And I think this will be really, really good for her.
Well, we can hear a little bit from her now speaking to the BBC about that big move to Chelsea.
Obviously, when you're coming into the last year, your contract, it's a little bit different, obviously, with women's and men's football. I think the clubs tend to let you go into your last year. So I think, obviously, naturally, discussions happened. And, yeah, for me, it was clear that it was time to, obviously, start a new chapter. And I think understanding what I wanted to do, knowing how I feel, my age, it was ready. It was time for me to like make that next step, but also not drop a level. And I think Chelsea have been such a winning team over the last few years. You can see it, how they play, the mentality. And for me, it was important to maintain the level I was at, in terms of competing for massive trophies, league, FA Cup, Champions League, because I still feel like I have a lot to give, you know. And I think for me, like I said, the big part of my move to Chelsea was I still feel really good. I feel like I can still compete physically and really help this team, because there's quite a couple of young players as well, and help them mature and develop, and really grow into themselves and give them confidence. And I think, for me, it was to maintain competing at the highest level for the best trophies in the game. And obviously, a big part of that is my my love for playing for Ireland too. And I think for me to be captain of the national team and set an example, I need to be playing at the highest level. So that was obviously part and parcel of it as well.
So yeah, that was Katie McCabe speaking to the BBC ahead of the new WSL season. And Scarlett, she's basically said everything that we've said there in terms of, you know, captain of the national side, wants to be playing at the highest level, needs to be playing at the highest level, feels like she still has so much more to give, but also feels like she has so much more leadership in her when it comes to helping young players develop. It's an exciting time.
It is, yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think it's testament to her that she's obviously still at that level, and you know, you can see that, like, even her level of fitness, like, you wouldn't think she's nearly 31, like, she's probably mid-20s at best, I'd say, or her whoopee age is about 18 still. But yeah, I think it's a great move for her, and it's obviously really exciting. She'll still be playing at that highest level, and obviously as a player she wants to still be competing for trophies, want to win the league with Chelsea, want to push to win the Champions League that they've been after. So I think it's going to be a really exciting year for her. I think, as we've been saying the whole podcast, the whole recording, you know, they all these players have the international team on their mind, which I think is so important as well. Like, even her mentioning it there, you know, there's not really a need for her to go into that, but she always wants to set the standard. And I think that's just sums her up, really, since she was whatever age coming into the captaincy. She's always wanted to set that standard for the players coming in and, you know, the players that have been there. So I'd say in that group, they're constantly just pushing each other. I think she's at the forefront of that. And yeah, I'm really excited to see her in blue. I've no Arsenal affiliation, so I have no issue with it at all, Kathleen, unfortunately for you. But no, I think it's a class move for her. And I think it's the best thing about it, she's still going to be in WSL, because I know for a while there was America might have been calling her. So I'm happy out that she's still in the league.
I am happy she's still in the league. I can't help it. My favourite player has moved to one of my least favourite clubs. I'm obviously going to talk about this for the rest of the season and be bitter about it, especially if she wins a Champions League trophy with them. But she didn't.
Look, at least Arsenal have made some. Arsenal have made some decent signings as well. So it's not all doom and gloom as it is on kind of more my side of the town. Kind of going through it there.
We will look at some of those other signings. So one final question on Katie, because we did see her whenever she was with Arsenal play in practically every position bar goals, and I'm sure if she was asked to go on goal, she probably would have over the course of her time there. And obviously Chelsea's roster, it's something that we've talked about for so long. It's so deep. There's so many big names in there. They have culled it a little bit over the summer, and it very much feels like, you know, out with maybe the Emma Hayes players and bringing in a few more of the Sonia Bompaster players. But what role do you see her playing in this Chelsea squad? Like, is she a starting player every week? Is she someone that comes on for the bigger moments of a game? What do you expect to see?
No, I think she starts left back as a left back. I think that the likes of Neve Charles did a really good job there for a number of years, but what she offers and kind of that change in style, bringing in the likes of Carpenters and having those kind of, and Bronze, they're more out and out fullbacks. And I think to have the balance of having an out-and-out left-footed left back, particularly when you have so many players roaming in front of you, like their wingers tend to cut in and they don't have too many set positions in those forward areas. I think having that structure of having a left back, I'd be very surprised if she was anything other than a starting left back for them. But she can do anything, so God knows. And you trust Bum Pastor to know what she's talking about. But I do think it's a great fit for her.
Yeah. Well, I think consistency of a position would be great for her. Like, we know she's capable of playing in any position, but it would be nice to see a season where maybe she's not seen as that utility player who can just plug gaps where they're needed and instead gets to develop those relationships within the Chelsea squad, so long as they come second and don't win the Champions League, of course. We should briefly look at some of the other moves around the WSL, because there has been some interesting ones. And I'm not surprised this is the club that I'm going to pick out first, because I kind of thought this was how it was going to go the minute that Michelle Kang took them over. But I think we have to talk about London City Lionesses. We talked a lot about them last season in terms of they brought really exciting football. You didn't really know what was going to happen, but it did feel like a lot of good attacking vibes and maybe not a strong defensive structure necessarily developed there. There was some interesting managerial changes as well. But like, you have to look at the headline signing of Alexa Pateas, Mappy Leon, Deani, Mary Earps, which maybe isn't like as big a name, but still like a decent
not as
signing.
Big a name, but probably the most needed.
Yeah, probably the most
solidifying of some of the defensive frailties that were there.
Yeah.
I think it's great crack. I love it. More of it, to be honest. I listened to something before and it was talking about like women's football and how we shouldn't have kind of tried to emulate the men's and the crossover of fan base, like that franchising kind of nearly works better because there's not that same kind of tribalism. We spoke about how fans kind of almost follow players at this point. And you can imagine what these names are going to bring to London City Lionesses. Like, the attendances and everything are going to be brilliant. And it's going to be really interesting. And I think, yeah, just great crack. Great crack.
Like
no one else was going to get Puteas into the league. No one else had the other kind of top teams. They're not going to want to bring in someone who's like, brings all of the focus and attention, whereas London City are like a team who can totally benefit from it.
Yeah, that's fair. I just, I do love the crack of the whole thing, and I totally agree with you. Like, the chaos of it all is brilliant, and it brings storylines to the league, and it's great that we're going to get to see these players week in, week out. But I don't know, there's something in me that questions the genuineness of it all for someone like Pateas, who has such an incredible legacy from what she did with her club, from what she did with her country. And the fact that, like, whenever her announcement happened, she was over in the States, like the announcement happened like during the World Cup in one of the stadiums. Like, it wasn't about London City Lionesses. It was about her, and it was about Michelle Kang.
But that's what London City are, you know, like I'm saying, they're not this established club that has history that people want you bleeding for the jersey. Do you know what I mean? Like, there isn't that tribalism of a lifelong supporter of a club. They have to do this to like garner attention. And
I think it's just very different to what we've seen in the men's game before. Like, this has never really happened. We've obviously seen like Man City and PSG come in with massive amounts of money, and we've seen Saudi takeovers at a number of Premier League clubs. But this is, as Karen, this is a whole different ball game. Like, we've never seen this sort of thing before, where it's actually all commercialized and there's no even slight effort to make it about the club or about the fans or about the culture or anything like that. It's purely all for a PR. It's like a massive PR stunt. They're trying to get as many eyes to the club as possible in as quick a time as possible, and nearly trying to build their own like fantasy football team of like stars from all across Europe. Like, it's like, will it even click? Because like last year, obviously coming in and coming maybe sixth in the league, maybe, and like sacking the manager halfway through the season and bringing in Adair Mastery. Like, it's just, it's all so mental. Like, you wouldn't even see it in the men's game. It's that obscure. So I think it, as you are saying, like, it is great crack. I'm so excited to see, actually, does it work? Because I think we could have all these massive names come into a team and, like, they mightn't even gel. You know, these massive maybe egos coming into a dressing room, like, it mightn't work. There might be, you know, you might be fighting fire with fire. So I think it'll be really interesting. Obviously, Michelle Kang's not hanging about. I think if they lost the first three games, I'd say the manager could be gone. You know, it's all very impulsive. It's all erratic. Like, she even spoke herself, she had no interest in women's football until about 10 years ago. So it's just, I think it's the craziest football story of recent years. And it's definitely going to bring more eyes to the league, because I think even people outside of women's football, people who never had an interest in it, you even see online, on Twitter and or on X or on TikToks, and people are going, this is like Messi going to like Brighton. Like, it just makes, you know, it makes no sense to them. So I think it's really exciting. But it's funny, I wonder how many financial fair play rules they'll break in the next 10 years.
Yeah, well, that will be interesting, because you have the obvious example of the fact that she also owns Lyon. So even if they would qualify for European football, she would have to pick her favourite child between the two of them. And now that would be really interesting chaos if she decided to take out European juggernauts like Champions League legends Lyon and push London City Lionesses in their place. That's something that I'd be interested to see. But yeah, I suppose as well, they also, because they're not affiliated to a men's team, they don't also have the sort of issues that other clubs have run into, where, you know, parts of the women's team are being sold off, or the entire women's team is being sold off to comply with financial fair play rules. So they're a beast unto their own, and I'm very excited to see how they go for for this season. I do think we need more stories like that. It's almost like they're trying to do what Emma Hayes did with Chelsea over like 12 years, except they're trying to do it in the space of about two seasons and don't have a long-term manager that anyone feels committed to or responsible for.
Yeah, but like, you could do just say, oh, they brought people in last year, and then you could wait for them to build and gel and all that sort of stuff. But too much has been invested, and there was too much buzz created by some of those players to kind of let it die off. You have to keep the buzz going. Like, they're starting from a lower ebb in terms of support than anyone else in the league, and they're going to be your go-to team to want to watch if you're only new, as obviously a lot of the women's soccer fandom is. A lot of people are still only being introduced to it, and will probably only be introduced to it in the next major tournament as well. And if they're looking for a WSL team and you have these household names, that's who they're going to gravitate towards. I think it's so interesting.
Producer Emma has just messaged me there and asked, does Mark Skinner go in after three games, assuming that they don't do well?
He doesn't have the pizzazz to be a London City Lioness manager.
I feel like he would think he did, though.
He would think he did. But no.
Speaking of United.
Set the tone there with his accents and earring and all the crack,
Speaking of United, a club that I think we probably hoped that we would see a bit more happening, but instead they've probably had more outgoing than they have had ingoing, doesn't fill you with massive confidence going into the season ahead?
No, it certainly doesn't. Obviously, they brought in a really good goalkeeper, which is probably the only position that we've felt very settled in. But look, she's obviously a very good signing, Leipzig. I'll hand over to Scarlett in terms of what the manager can do with the squad that she has, because obviously Mark Skinner and Man United mutually agreeing to part ways was probably partly Mark Skinner having some respect for the girls who were still going to be there and not throwing the toys out of the pram of the lack of backing. I'm sure that had something to do with it. based on this transfer window, you'd imagine it had a lot to do with it. Because I'm not sure the interest levels would have been there to change him otherwise.
He said as much himself, and his reasoning for leaving was basically the exact same as Casey Stoney's reasoning for leaving, which, you know, it's however many years down the line, you would hope that things had changed a little bit. But yeah, as Karen said there, Scarlett, you have a bit of an insight to our new Manchester United manager. Great to see a woman manager come into the league. There are very few of them, so it's always great to have another one. But you did have the inside scoop on this one initially, which was very fun.
Yeah, the Athletic need to get on to me. Yeah. I suppose, Eva Ollett obviously was at Hearts for the last 5 years, and obviously the reason United have signed her is because she took Hearts from rock bottom, nearly getting relegated from the first flight in Scotland, up to winning the league last season with very little budget. Probably the lowest budget out of all the top five, the fully professional clubs in Scotland. So they've obviously seen that and seen the work she's done with young players. And obviously has seen her excel with her unique style of play. It's very European and a very progressive. I'm sure United will see it very soon. Sort of like a three at the back with a diamond four in midfield, and then obviously your striker and your two fullbacks, but more so higher wingers. So it's very, very advanced. And I think even for me playing against them, we never did more analysis on a team than we did when we were playing Hearts, just because of how complex their system was. So like, she had them working very, very hard at Hearts, but from my insight of talking to girls who were at their last season, it was very robotic. I suppose a lot of time was spent on analysis, so it was very, this is plan A, and if plan A doesn't work, there isn't really a plan B. So I think it'll be interesting to see how long it'll take for other clubs to figure out the system. And then I think once you figure out how to beat it, I think it'll be difficult for her to be able to change her ways. I think it's the same as Amorim. Like, if it doesn't work, I don't know what her plan B is, because this is all she's ever known. And I know that speaking to former Hearts players or current Hearts players that were played under her, she's very resistant to change. So I think we've seen this on the men's side with Manchester United in the last 18 months or so. So I think it'll be very interesting. I think if it works, they'll fly. But again, if she goes into a squad that doesn't have the capabilities to play her system, I can't see her changing. So it'll be interesting.
That's a really intriguing insight, because it does sound like she is a United manager through and through. But we have seen that to varying levels of success over recent seasons, both on the men's and the women's side. Do you think that she has the squad there that she can make play to the way that she wants? Like, I would say no, most likely, just in the sense that she hasn't, the investment hasn't been put into this sort of squad. But then again, maybe she can take what's there. But even when it comes to, you know, academy players and different ones coming up, it's a thin squad, and it has been a thin squad for a long time.
Yeah, I'd say that's what Manchester United looked at in terms of their recruitment process for a manager. She had a very small squad at Hearts, and obviously, as I said, a low budget. So they're looking for her to, I suppose, develop the players that are already there and make use of what she has. Will she be able to transform players to play her style? Maybe. It worked at Hearts. It could work here. So, yeah, I think it's going to be extremely interesting. I think her personal development with players at Hearts was outstanding. A lot of them have moved on now to the Championship this season, and have, you know, said that her work has like helped them get to that point and has massively improved them as a player. I know that the backroom staff have stayed, which is, I think, important, because her player management on a personal level isn't great. It might be a language barrier, but I think she just prefers to take the tactical side of the game rather than focus on giving a player an arm around a shoulder if they need it, or, you know, chatting to players or being that sort of personnel to the players. So I think it's important that the backroom staff has remained mostly the same. Maybe your assistant manager can offer that sort of bridge that gap, I suppose, from players to staff, because I think that as well in women's football is really, really important. So if they can get the mix right between her tactical knowledge and, you know, the player to staff relationship, I think it could work. But as I said, it's
think
all about
she'll need more than one, do you think she'll need more than one season?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It's you can't expect her to come in this season, I think, and succeed straight away. I'd give it 2 years, maybe.
Well, I wouldn't expect that squad to succeed anyway, but do you think it could be a case of stick with the process with her? Like, she could be, it could be a three season type of project almost.
Yeah, like when you look at her sort of history of Hearts, like they started from the bottom and gradually built up. So I think it does need time. It seems like a long term development plan, which is, I suppose, positive for a team. You'd hope that a team like Man United would have that approach. But yeah, I think it'll definitely need time. I can't see it working straight away. You've even see that in like the friendlies they're playing. They're not getting the results, obviously, but pre-seasons, you can't really read too much into that anyway. But I'd say it'll take at least 6 months to even get used to the system that they play, because it is very complex. And I'd say for her to get, you know, you're telling Ella Toon to not turn, not receive on a half turn and play forward. You're telling her to maybe bounce and play all these rotations and play these little triangles in midfield. And, you know, you're trying to change a player like that's game mightn't go too well. So I think it'll take time, definitely. But I think, to be fair to her, I think she can succeed. I've only heard good things from, you know, she got everything spot on in terms of her, as I said, her tactical approaches and her opposition analysis was always spot on. So I think her mind for football is brilliant. It's just maybe how it's presented or whether the players click with it or if they fully invest in it or not.
Well, tune into the Koi Gig pod for the rest of the season for Scarlett's inside scoop on Evil and how she is doing with Manchester United. No, but that's all really, really interesting and a really good insight into what potentially lies ahead for United this season. Unfortunately, we have run over time. I'm not sure which one, but we will.
Sorry,
have
can I just mention something quickly, Kathleen? I know we spoke about the transfers earlier, but I don't know if you've seen that Eva Brennan's linked to go to Man City in the next few weeks. Really, really interesting. Obviously, it would be a massive move for her. So,
is a pattern there though of our young players going a little bit too early to City?
Yeah, I think as well. I've heard that Tara is looking maybe at a championship club for a full-time a permanent move to the WSL too, so I think that could be happening this window as well, but unsure on that one.
As you said previously, The Athletic, hit up Scarlett Heron for all the transfer news.
Women's football is a very small space.
It is, and especially when it comes to an Irish context as well, when we know so many different people around the place. Do you think, because like I know City has been an interesting route for Irish players, some successful, some not so, maybe more not so in the last while, but do you think like going into that professional setup, even if it's for one season and you get to, you know, you're training beside Bunny Shaw or whoever it is, maybe you're not getting the minutes, is there a benefit to that if you can get yourself out into then more regular playing time?
I think there has to be.
There's a,
you know,
benefit. Yeah, it's a significant like jump in standard and you're training professionally full time. So there is that. But you have to look at the patterns that have evolved from the transfers to City and how it's translated into like success in the short term, even from Tyler Toland. She's had to really graft her way through certain teams to be playing regularly in the championship. So there's a cautionary tale there, but obviously in terms of going to a big massive club and getting that experience compared to playing in League of Ireland, there's like Scarlett, I don't know, you think there's little to no drawbacks on that, I'd imagine.
It's just beyond what you could even imagine. But I think it's hard, I suppose, to sit down with an 18-year-old and say, you know, have you thought about this and that, about the maybe negative aspects? Like, if Manchester City come in for you at any stage of your career, I doubt you're thinking about anything but how amazing an experience that would be and what an amazing opportunity. So I hope it does go through for her and she does get there, because what an achievement for her. To play for one of the biggest clubs in the world is special for her. Like, and I know that the history of sort of Irish players maybe going over there hasn't worked out, but I suppose someone has to break that mold. So
it's true.
That is very, very true. And if this transfer does happen, we hope for her sake that she is the player to do that, because we can always do with more Irish players playing at the top teams. Especially, I feel like this season it's notable that, you know, we don't have as many players as we used to have playing at the big clubs or even just in the WSL. So the more the better, and best of luck. Okay, we will leave it there for now, but we will have a full preview of the season coming to you next week. We also have some very exciting interviews coming up over the next couple of weeks, potentially with some of the names that have been mentioned during this hour-long recording of a podcast. So stay tuned for those. We will also look on the league here. We didn't get a chance to touch on it today, but we will be looking at that because we always like to support our side of things as well. Very exciting penalty shootout at the weekend, even if parts of the match were slightly difficult to see because of the lack of lighting. But that's a story for another day. So happy to be back for this new season. Hopefully going to be bigger and better than any of the ones that we have had so far. And delighted to have you all back listening to us. The Koi Gig Pod and Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Hopefully around this time next year, we will all be reminiscing on a brilliant trip to Brazil. But for now, Karen and Scarlett, thank you very much. Delightful as always. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you all again very, very soon.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.